So now I welcome up the last speaker for this Kaleidoscope session. It's Paul Schött from the FDA, and he's going to tell us about his experiences using R in a regulatory environment.
Okay, so let's see if I can navigate this. Okay, so my name's Paul Schütte, and you can see my title and organization. Since I work for a government organization, there's a lot of lines. But it specifies where we are. We have a standard disclaimer. So it basically says that if you don't like what I say, blame me, not my agency. A little bit of to get started with this is I might call this FDA 101. What does the FDA do? FDA is responsible for protecting the public health by assuring the safety, efficacy, and security of human and veterinary drugs, biological products, medical devices, our nation's food supply, cosmetics, and products that emit radiation. And there's a link in here in blue if you want to look at those later on. So basically, you've probably interacted with FDA-regulated products almost every day. If you eat, you brush your teeth, you take a prescription drug medication, take an over-the-counter medication, you apply sunblock, which you probably need in this environment. You've interacted with an FDA-regulated product, and it comprises about 20 to 25% of consumer spending in the United States, so a fairly significant chunk of the economy. FDA is structured in a certain way, has a bunch of different centers. Think of these centers, if you're in a university environment, as analogous to colleges. They have certain missions, and they regulate certain products. We have CDER, which is where I'm located and is actually the largest one. CDRH CIFSAN, which is the one that you probably hear most about if you follow things, and they have food recalls. Center for Tobacco Products is our most recent center. Center for Veterinary Medicine and the National Center for Toxicological Research, NCTR. NCTR is located in Arkansas, but the rest are headquartered in the outer suburbs of DC and the Maryland side, but there are offices of FDA across the country, including one in San Francisco. So I'm going to jump from FDA as a whole to CDER. What does CDER do? CDER promotes the public health by ensuring the availability of safe and effective drugs. I'll focus a little bit more on the statistical aspects. So in this list here, let's see if I've got this. Well, maybe not. That was not what I meant to do. Command L. Okay. Thank you. So the, let's see, I'll just use the mouse, how's that? A and B are more or less what the statisticians will be doing, which is conducting a rigorous science-based pre-market review. That's as data comes in. Identify appropriate new methods that can be used. We're not really quite as involved, to be honest, with the outreach to patients and others, although some of our analyses and graphs might be used as part of that mission. So this is the pre-market. The safe use is also something that we work with. We protect public health by promoting the safe use of marketed drugs, conduct post-market surveillance with follow-up studies. Again, A and B. Part C and D are actually, we contribute, but it's not really our focus. And the item three is protect public health by ensuring the quality and integrity of marketed drug products. Turns out counterfeit and adulterated drugs can be a problem in some areas. And we provide support primarily for areas A and B. So this is taken from the FDA strategic plan for my center. And the way we accomplish this is through multidisciplinary review teams, including statisticians, but many others, but all focus on statistical reviews and statistical computing. Okay, so what is a statistical review and how is it done? What happens is we have what we call a sponsor. It's usually a pharmaceutical firm, and they will submit clinical trial data to us in support of what's called an application. What we're supposed to do is to determine the accuracy of the sponsor's data and validity of their analysis. So we're looking at an issue of reproducibility and repeatability. Can we, on our own, replicate at least the conclusions that the sponsor came up with? And in some cases, we may even want to rerun the sponsor's programs on the sponsor's data and hopefully get the sponsor's results. That sometimes doesn't happen, and that becomes a concern. So we're looking at those features. We assess the robustness of the sponsor's results. Missing at random is sometimes an assumption that's being used. What sort of missingness is going on with the data? So we might look at various ways of assessing those facts. Evaluate results in light of evidentiary standards. And we assess the risk and benefit in pre- and post-market reviews. An important thing that we do is interact with the FDA advisory committees. And these are committees of primarily academics and others who provide feedback to the FDA in terms of whether or not a particularly controversial product should be approved. We do strive for consistency across the medical divisions. While we factor in therapeutic considerations and strive for transparency and reproducibility of reviews. So the FDA statistical reviews are a critical part of the process to ensure that approved drugs are safe and effective. Statistical software. Can R be used at the FDA? Can sponsors use R in their submissions? It may be the case that because we have in CDER and CBER required XPT data sets, which are so-called SAS transport files, which are actually an open standard. It's been assumed that in some quarters that FDA requires the use of a designated proprietary software package, namely SAS. We did manage to get what we're calling a statistical software clarifying statement passed through the system. And this is available on a website. If you click here, with this particular link, you would see that. FDA does not require use of any specific software for statistical analyses, and statistical software is not explicitly discussed in Title 21 of the Code of Federal Regulations. Title 21 is actually the part of the Code of Federal Regulations that governs how FDA performs its mission. So we're saying, as far as our understanding goes, we can go ahead and use this. However, software packages used for statistical analyses should be fully documented in the submission, including version and build identification. Furthermore, we can say the computer software used for data management and statistical analysis should be reliable, and documentation of appropriate software testing procedures should be available. Sponsors are encouraged to consult with FDA review teams, especially with FDA statisticians, regarding the choice and suitability of statistical software packages at an early stage of the product development process. So sponsors are free to propose using R, and we do have some sponsors that have used R primarily for post-market considerations. So what are some of the R use cases? Let me start with some of our academic collaborators. We do have these things called broad agency agreements, or BAAs. See if that will work. We'll worry about that later. Here are some of the packages. These are actually packages developed essentially under contract by academic collaborators. We also have something called the Oak Ridge Institute for Science and Education, ORISE. These are fellows. These are typically graduate students who come in and work with us. So for example, for the first bullet here, ORSI is an odds ratio confidence intervals package developed by my former ORISE intern, Lebo's son, when he was a graduate student, and Lebo's gone on to work for J&J. We do have other methods that are being developed. We have a memorandum of understanding with the University of North Carolina going through the Critical Path Institute to actually do a year-long project to support a graduate student doing Bayesian methods applied to ruling out excess cardiovascular risk. And even as we speak now, R is being used by a number of our summer interns to do their ORISE projects. In addition to these types of collaborations, we also have what are called CRADAs, Cooperative Research and Development Agreements, that can be developed to work with companies. And we have at least one in progress where R will be used. I'm the PI on that, but I can't really say too much because it hasn't gone through the full approval process. So we'll stay tuned for more developments later. Our packages have been developed by folks in industry. GS Design is a group sequential design package developed by folks at Merck. Carrot is something that Max Kuhn has talked about. So that's been part of the tutorials, in fact. Our colleagues at NIH have developed a number of our packages, of course, with Bioconductor, as well as some other ones as well. How does FDA actually use R? Let's consider a few use cases. Generally, we allow people to use the statistical software of their choice as long as it's fit for purpose. So in addition to R, some folks use Minitab and Stata. Where we see the greatest use, though, is with things, for example, such as graphics. Even if somebody's used, say, a package such as SAS for their analysis, they may not want to use SAS graphics. So in many cases, R is being used as sort of a hybrid form. We can use this for presentations and also labels. So one of our most important products, in some sense, is a label. That's that little piece of white paper that's tightly folded up that most people just throw in the wastebasket. So one thing I would encourage you to do if you ever take prescription medication is pull that out, unfold it, and actually read it. There's some interesting things going on, some potentially alarming things occasionally, but that's actually some place where you might actually see R graphics in print. Other areas where we use R is for things like simulations, the ability to look at parallelization and high-performance computing environments is helpful. Methodology development, innovation, and evaluation. And something we use, have started relatively recently, is something called OpenFDA. It's an initiative. And we have some LRT, likelihood ratio test methods, applied to adverse event data. And let's see. So let's take a look at some of the advantages and challenges of using R. One advantage, of course, is the cost, right? R is free. Well, not entirely, if you think about it, but it's relatively low cost. Ease of use, we have an active community, a large number of packages. I would say parallelization is a strength of R compared to some systems. And its ability to interface with other software, particularly in the Bayesian world. There are a number of different software packages of interest. There are some challenges, though. There isn't the 1-800 number, call R, that actually seems to work. So some people who want high levels of support, that can be a challenge. Hardware needs. R, basically, data needs to go in a RAM, and that can create some issues. Not all packages are created equally. Reproducibility can be a concern or an issue. Statistical reviewers are not programmers. We're not all as good at doing things as we would like in terms of good programming practices. Some developments that have occurred. We've recognized that there is a need to recruit people who have a greater R capability and experience. There's some stuff for USA Jobs. There's a email in case you're so interested. A little example of that we've actually have advertised for people with R experience. Let's see if I can do one thing quickly. Let's see if our, let's see. We were trying to do, where was this? We were going to try to do a quick demonstration of the LRT package here with a Shiny app, but it doesn't seem to be, here we go. And this is not my computer, as you can tell. And let's see, I think I'm running out short on time. What I will say is, if you look at the slides and you open this up, there is a Shiny app that will allow you to look at what we call the FAERS data set in an open environment. FAERS stands for the FDA Adverse Event Relational System. Excuse me. Adverse Event Reporting System. And what this is if you've ever had, if you look at one of these drug labels that you threw away, there's a little thing at the bottom that says, if you experience a problem with this product, call this number in this country. And you can report these to an FDA database. We can look at those events for a particular drug compared to all other drugs. And this is a methodology that two of my colleagues have actually worked on and developed as a way to try to find some of these so-called safety signals. So it's actually interesting to explore. If you got it set up, you can even run it on your smartphone in your doctor's office, which they may not like. But one thing to be aware of with something like this particular application is that correlation is not causation. So if the example I had was going to put in acetaminophen, also known as Tylenol in this country, and the number one adverse event that shows up is suicide. It turns out this is a drug that's used for those purposes. So I would strongly encourage you to experiment with that if you have interest. And if you have additional questions or questions about this particular application, I'd be available later. Thank you very much.
So thank you, Paul. I think we have time for one short question.
Hi. Can you talk a little bit more about this open FDA concept?
So the question is, can we talk a little bit more about the open FDA concept? Part of the idea is to make some data that we do have that's not either commercial confidential or personal identifiable available. So this particular one uses a collection of data that started back in 68 for the adverse event reporting system. It's been de-identified. There's an API that's been developed that people can go out and use. So this is actually open FDA. This particular data set is, and Shiny app is actually running on our studios. Server. They've actually rented it out. There's some limits in terms of what we can make available. FDA does not own our clinical trial data sets. They're officially, they're owned by the companies, and we are stewards of them, so we can't make those available. What we can do is there are some areas where they're making some of this available. AIRDS data is one area. An area where they're really pushing things right now is genomic sequencing of Listeria, Salmonella, all the various pathogens that have been going through. Whether or not they'll make those available and in what time frame, I don't know. But we can only make the lowest level of confidentiality available at this time.
Great. Okay. So thank you very much. That concludes this session. And now I believe there is coffee and a poster session in the pavilion.